Part 4. Mindfulness of the Dhamma. Chapter 10. Hindrances. Once, when the Venerable Anuruddha was meditating in seclusion, seven thoughts occurred to him. Knowing Anuruddha's thoughts, the Buddha appeared in front of him. The Blessed One sat down on a prepared seat and said, "Good, Anuruddha, very good. It's good that you think these seven thoughts of a great person. This Dhamma is for one who is modest, not one who is boastful, for one who is content, not one who is discontent, for one who is reclusive, not one who is entangled in society. This Dhamma is for one who is energetic, not one who is lazy, for one who is mindful, not one who is unmindful, for one whose mind is centered, not one whose mind is distracted, for one who is discerning, not for one who is heedless." "Now then, Anuruddha, think the eighth thought of a great person. This Dhamma is for one who is wise, not for one who delights in delusion." Then the Buddha gave Anuruddha instructions for using his insights to reach states of deep concentration. Dwelling alone, secluded, heedful, ardent and resolute, Anuruddha followed the Buddha's instructions, and in a short time attained liberation, the supreme goal of the holy life. On becoming one of the arahants, Anuruddha recited this verse. "Knowing my thoughts, the teacher came to me. He taught in line with my thoughts, and then further. Delighting in non-delusion, he taught wisdom. Knowing his Dhamma, I delighted in doing his bidding. Knowledge has been obtained, the Buddha's bidding done." Now we come to the last section of the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutta, Mindfulness of Dhamma. It gives instructions and practical advice to help us overcome things that hold us back from making progress in our meditation. As the story of Anuruddha illustrates, it takes outstanding qualities of mind and heart to reach our spiritual goals. We must be modest, content, reclusive, mindful, centered, discerning, and wise. If we already have these noble qualities, the Dhamma benefits us by leading us toward liberation. If we do not yet have these qualities, the Dhamma helps us to develop them. In practical terms, our mindfulness practice gradually helps us to grow the attributes of enlightenment. To begin, we remove the habits of mind that block our progress on the path. Our task is like preparing a plot of ground to grow a garden. First, we clear away the brush, weeds, and other obvious obstructions. In the Dhamma, we call these impediments hindrances. In this chapter, we consider five hindrances and what we can do to remove them. Once the ground has been cleaned up, at least on the surface, we can begin work at a deeper level. In Chapter 11, we dig down to the underlying root system of the hindrances. The five aggregates of clinging, the contact of the senses with sensory objects, and the 10 fetters that arise from that contact. Only when we have uprooted these deep causes can 7 positive qualities, called the factors of enlightenment, start to grow. We explore these qualities in Chapter 12. Finally, in Chapter 13, we look at the Buddha's roadmap of the Dhamma path, the 4 noble truths and 8 mindful steps. It outlines the journey we must take to travel from suffering to freedom. The 5 hindrances. When we practice mindfulness meditation, it doesn't take long for us to discover that it's not always easy to concentrate. Whether we're trying to focus on the breath or to observe the changes in our body, feelings, or thoughts, distractions have a way of pulling us off track. The most powerful of these distractions are called the hindrances. They interfere with our ability to concentrate both during meditation and in everyday life. We have already mentioned some of the hindrances. For instance, we noted that our desire for pleasure and hatred for pain hide behind many of our feelings. Other hindrances to progress on the path are restlessness and worry, laziness, also called sloth and torpor, and doubt. Mindfulness helps us to know 5 important things about the hindrances: when they are present, when they are absent, how they arise, what to do to make them go away, and how to keep them from coming back. When the hindrances have been overcome, the mind automatically becomes calm, bright, and clear. This clarity is essential to insight into the impermanent, suffering, and selfless nature of everything that exists. Desire. As a hindrance, desire means more than just clinging. In Pali, the word used at this point in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutta is chanda, which means willingness to have sense pleasure. As we have noted, the willingness to experience delightful sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches often distracts us when we're trying to meditate. As we have all experienced, sense desire also disturbs our concentration at work or when we're trying to finish some household task. How often have we lost focus because we are suddenly hungry for ice cream or because of physical desire for our boyfriend or girlfriend? Distractions like these are chanda, desire for physical pleasure arising from the senses. Desire can also arise in the sixth sense, the mind. So while meditating, sometimes the sound of a song we like starts running through our mind. Then, instead of paying attention to its arising and vanishing, we want to keep enjoying that sound. If we're not careful, soon our attention is focused on the song rather than on the breath or other meditation subject. The first step to overcoming the hindrance of desire is recognizing that we have it. So when the wish to see a movie distracts us from our focus, we recognize, I have this desire in me. Next, rather than feeding our desire by indulging in imaginary enjoyment of it, we use mindfulness to understand its source and suppress it. For instance, we remember that the pleasure that arises from sense contact exists for an instant and disappears just as quickly, leaving us disappointed. We can also reflect about how unattractive or harmful our desire is. For instance, ice cream is terrible for me. My face breaks out and it makes me fat. Or perhaps, this desire is disrupting my concentration and holding me back from making progress in my meditation. Let me not think of it. When the desire is gone, we notice that it is gone. Finally, we use vigilant effort to make sure that it does not return, at least for the remainder of this meditation session. Unfortunately, these measures are only a temporary solution. Until we destroy the roots of desire through deep concentration meditation, it keeps coming back again and again. Ill will. Ill will includes every kind of aversion, from mild irritation to violent hatred. As we have discussed, even ordinary anger makes us feel awful and destroys our ability to concentrate. The story is told about a monk who spent years in solitude meditating in a cave. When he finally emerged and went down to the village, a passerby brushed against him by mistake and stepped on his toe. Immediately, the monk cried out in anger, "Get out of my way!" Of course, we have to assume that this unfortunate monk did not meditate correctly, using mindfulness and concentration to remove the hindrances and destroy their roots. The method for overcoming the hindrance of ill will is the same as we discussed for desire. When irritation arises, we try to notice it immediately so that we can take action to overcome it before it escalates. The practical suggestions for overcoming anger given in Chapter 7 are a good place to start. Keep in mind that every kind of ill will arises from the wish to be physically separated from something that causes us discomfort or pain. Remember also that ill will and its causes are impermanent. Looking back, we often feel embarrassed that we got angry over some trivial thing. Over time, like everything else, anger fades away. Until it does, we practice patience to keep us from reacting in ways that we may regret later on. The profound practice of patience calms the mind and makes us peaceful. Of course, patience does not mean allowing someone to abuse us. Rather, it is buying time so that our overheated emotions cool down and we can respond kindly and appropriately. If ill will arises while we are trying to meditate, we should remember that anger makes it impossible to think clearly and hinders our progress on the path. The most powerful way to get rid of anger is to cultivate the mind of loving friendliness, or metta. No matter what someone does to make us angry, we can always find a reason to feel compassion. Perhaps the person who offended us was sincerely trying to help us, or was physically ill or emotionally disturbed. Metta softens the heart and helps us to feel sorry for someone who has acted unskillfully. Rather than lashing out, we think, "How can I help this person?" When such thoughts have helped us to overcome ill will, we notice that it is gone. We use mindfulness and diligence to keep this hindrance from returning. Sloth and torpor. In everyday life, physical laziness, or sloth, arises for many reasons. For some, laziness is just a bad habit. For others, it's a way of escaping from feelings of discontent or depression. When we have eaten too much rich food, had too much to drink, or exercised too vigorously, we often feel drowsy. When it becomes a regular occurrence, physical laziness is a problem because we have no drive or energy. It is impossible to get any work done. All we want to do is lie down and take a nap. Mental laziness, or torpor, is an even bigger obstacle to concentration. The mind becomes sluggish and cloudy, like water covered by mossy plants. Everything we try to focus on seems indistinct and very far away. We can't read, we can't think, we can't speak clearly, and even the simplest question is confusing. We have no idea what is happening around us or inside us. This dull state is very close to ignorance, which is sometimes called eternal slumber. When we meditate, the breath, mind, and body become so relaxed that it's easy to slide into drowsiness or dullness. Although sleepiness is very sweet and we welcome it at the right time, the joys of deep concentration do not arise from laziness. We must not confuse the pleasurable feeling of physical or mental relaxation with the attainment of high meditative states. Insight requires energy, vigor, and sharpness. When we recognize that we are under the influence of laziness, we pay attention to it. We remember that sloth and torpor hinder our mindfulness and apply remedies to overcome it. For instance, we remember the stories of diligent meditators like Anuruddha, who attained liberation by practicing with persistent dedication, not by taking a nap. As Anuruddha realized and the Buddha confirmed, this dharma is for the energetic, not for the lazy. It also helps to talk to our laziness. For instance, we say silently, I have been born a human being. To be born as a human is rare. The best use of human life is not indulging in the pleasures of dullness and doing nothing. My mind must be clear so that I can free myself from fear, tension, and worry. My ultimate goal is to be free from greed, hatred, and delusion. A lazy person cannot achieve real peace and happiness. In a sutta, an internal pep talk like this is compared to a cowherd who guides cows with a stick. Whenever one of them goes astray, he taps her and makes her come back to the herd. When laziness disappears, we notice that it is gone. We use mindfulness to make sure it does not return. Here are a few other simple suggestions for overcoming sloth and torpor, and for making sure it does not come back. Key points for overcoming laziness. Open your eyes and roll your eyeballs for a few seconds. Close your eyes and go back to your mindfulness meditation. Visualize a bright light, a sunny sky, or a dazzling white field of snow. Focus your mind on this image for a few seconds. As you are visualizing, the sleepiness fades away. Take a deep breath and hold it as long as you can, then slowly breathe out. Repeat this several times until your body warms up and perspires. Then return to your mindfulness practice. Stand up and do standing meditation for a few minutes until sleepiness goes away. If it does not, follow the instructions for walking meditation given in Chapter 2 until sleepiness disappears. Then return to your sitting practice. Wash your face with cold water, or pinch your earlobes hard with thumbs and index fingers and really feel the pinch. Remember the outstanding qualities of the Buddha and allow his example to inspire you. If sleepiness or dullness occurs frequently, change the time of your meditation session. Some people are most alert in the early morning, others meditate best before bed. Experiment with various times and find one that works best for you. Consider what other helpful lifestyle changes you might make, such as not eating a meal before you meditate. If none of these techniques work, practice loving friendliness for yourself and nap for a few minutes. restlessness and worry. This hindrance is the opposite of sloth and torpor. Instead of shutting down and going to sleep, the mind becomes unsettled and hyperactive. It is like water rippled by the wind. We worry about the things that we have not done or have not done properly. We worry about security. We worry that something may go wrong at home, or with our job, or with the family, or with our health, or with the economy. We worry about events in the city, in the country, or on the other side of the world. When this mind gets going, we can always find one thing or another to worry about. Physical restlessness can also be a problem. We are filled with nervous anxiety and find it impossible to sit still. We pace the floor, pick up the phone and put it down, open the refrigerator even though we're not hungry. We don't know why we are so restless. Perhaps there's no reason. Of course, in this state, accomplishing any practical task, let alone sitting down to meditate, are out of the question. As with the other hindrances, the first step is simply becoming aware that we are restless or worried. We acknowledge that these states make it impossible to concentrate and take action to overcome them. The best remedy is meditation on the breath. As we have noted, when we focus on the breath, our breathing naturally becomes calm. When the breath becomes calm, the mind and body also become calm. We use the counting technique we have talked about. Breathe in and out, then count one. Breathe in and out, then count two. Breathe in and out, then count three. Go on counting up to 10, then do the same counting down from 10 to 1. Repeat this cycle, this time counting from 1 to 9 and back down. The third time, count up to 8 and back to 1. Continue until mind and body settle down. To keep restlessness and worry from returning, cultivate a feeling of confidence in the Buddha and in his teachings. The path so many people, just like us, have followed to overcome hindrances and free themselves from suffering. Doubt. Having doubts is natural. Intelligent doubt, using our own experience and best judgment to make sure that we are on the right course, is actually helpful to progress on the spiritual path. But when doubts take over the mind and prevent us from practicing mindfulness, they are a hindrance. For instance, sometimes we sit down to meditate and immediately start to wonder why we are doing this. We're not sure that the method we are following will work or whether it's the right method for us. We wonder whether we have understood the instructions of our meditation teacher, or even if we're the right kind of person for meditation. Once doubt gets going, it gets bigger and bigger. We wonder whether there is any such thing as enlightenment, or whether the whole system of meditation makes any sense. Again, first notice that doubt has arisen. Simply watch until doubt fades away. If it does not, we take stronger measures. Reflect mindfully on the qualities of the Buddha and his Dharma teachings. Remember other people who have followed these teachings and become inspiring role models. Remember past successes, such as peaceful and focused meditation sessions, times when hindrances such as sleepiness or restlessness were overcome, or other ways we've changed for the better as a result of our practice. Have a talk with doubt. Be gentle but firm. Say, for instance, "Life is short. I cannot allow doubts to keep me from making progress toward my spiritual goals." When doubt disappears, notice that it is gone. Stay mindful to keep doubt from coming back. What we gain. When we overcome the hindrances, even temporarily, it's a great victory. We have cleared the ground and good qualities, such as faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, can begin to grow. In the sutta, the Buddha described how good this victory feels. Suppose a man with wealth and possessions were traveling along a deserted road where food was scarce and dangers were many. After some time he crossed over the desert and arrived at a village that is safe and free from danger. He would reflect on this, and as a result he would become glad and experience joy. In the same way, when the bhikkhu sees that these five hindrances have been abandoned within himself, he regards that as a freedom from debt, as good health, as release from prison, as freedom from slavery, as a place of safety. Gladness arises. When he is gladdened, rapture arises. When his mind is filled with rapture, his body becomes tranquil. Tranquil in body, he experiences happiness. Being happy, his mind becomes concentrated. Translator, Bhikkhu Bodhi.